What is black and white and red all over?
Newspaper.
Man.
Zebra in a blender.
Ew.
That was the joke when I was growing up.
Gross.
Anyways, hey, Angela, how's it going?
Hi, it's all right.
We're talking about a subject that you really like today.
We are mid-century modern architecture.
Yeah, today we're going to be talking about mid-century architecture and more precisely, architect Bruce Goff, who is Oklahoman by adoption, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. He moved here when he was about 12 years old, I believe.
He was born in Alton, Kansas in 1904 to a jeweler and a school teacher and then moved to Tulsa in 1914. And at the age of 12, he began an internship or apprenticeship at an architecture firm.
Yeah, I guess his father kind of thought of him as some sort of like prodigy. So he really pushed to get him into that firm to start.
Which is weird because internship at Nintendo when I was 12.
Yeah, I was starting to think of what I was doing at 12. Riding my bike.
Yeah. That's Did it have about little it. Streamers on the handlebars?
Not at 12. That's more of a younger when I was like 8. I had a.
Did it have a banana seat?
I had a 12 speed by.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah, yeah. By the time I was 12.
You just blew past 10 and you were like 12 speeds.
Oh, yeah. You know me. I love speed.
This would have been in 1972 when you were 12, right?
You know what? I am not ashamed of my age. You should not age shame me.
I'm not.
Okay.
That much. Just, I have to tease.
I know. So, yeah, I'm really into mid-century modern architecture. Actually, mid-century architecture as a whole, there's a difference than like mid-century modest, I guess you would say, maybe like a ranch house or something like that, as opposed to modern, streamlined, clean lines, use of a lot of glass, different materials than what was being used.
So in Oklahoma City, which is where we're are, mm-hmm. obviously, biggest example that everyone would know. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you drive down Klassen or Lincoln.
Yeah, yeah, the Gold Dome.
The Gold Dome, though, is probably the biggest symbol of mid-century modern architecture in Oklahoma City.
Right, and we do have so many really cool churches all over Oklahoma.
Churches, and there's so many houses peppered. It's strange. There's so many neighborhoods where it's
just all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's kind of peppered throughout older neighborhoods, including a Goff house.
Yeah, there is a Goff house here in town. And so that's what we're talking about today is going to be Bruce Goff.
We also have to say before we get going, this is we're going to be just talking about houses and architecture. So play along at home.
Look up.
Yeah, look up or, you know, hopefully this will pique your, if you're driving in your car, you know.
Pique your interest to start.
Pique your interest really to go looking. Look up these houses because we. Yeah. They're kind of described, and his style is described, but mm-hmm. it doesn't do it any justice.
So tell us a little bit about Bruce Goff.
So he began the internship at the age of 12 at Rush, Endicott & Rush, an architecture firm in Tulsa. And during this time, he never had any formal training other than kind of on-the-job training, so he never went to
like an actual university. School, university for that.
He helped design the Methodist Episcopal Church in Tulsa. It's on Boston Avenue. And that was built in 1926. That was a collaboration. Bruce Goff is interesting because he's one of these, he was a true artist. He was really into painting and music.
Right.
A real Renaissance man. And he saw the intersection between all of these forms of art. And that comes out in his work.
So after he left the firm in Tulsa, I believe he went to war.
Well, yeah. Well, first he was in Chicago. He was teaching and studying, not in any formal way. But, I mean, he was teaching in a formal way, but he was just learning from other architects. And then, he did. He went with the U.S. Navy Construction Battalion and was stationed in Alaska during World War II. And then after, he goes to San Francisco for a bit. And then in 1947, he returns to Norman, Oklahoma, where he is an actual professor of architecture at the University of Oklahoma. And then that same year becomes head of the department.
So that's really impressive that somebody who didn't have any formal training, that just kind of goes to show how interesting and how different and exciting his work is that he jumped an entire step of formal training. And he really was so different than anything that was going on at the time. Really also goes to show what was going on in Norman, Oklahoma, which is kind of surprising. You wouldn't think like the University of Oklahoma back in the 50s had this like
Yeah, it would really be open. Great. But it's the post-war. You've got lots of excitement. And there's this culture and architecture at the University of Oklahoma at the time that really helped, and Bruce Goff helped foster this creative, and we'll get into it later, but a lot of the architecture students and professors at the time were artists of all types. And so there was really this kind of flashpoint that happened, and Bruce Goff was kind of the head of it as the head of the architecture school, and his students would be prolific all across the state.
Right.
Let's get Linda Ozan in here from the State Historic Preservation Office, which is right in our building. So Linda was nice enough to come down. And what is your title at the State Historic Preservation Office?
I'm the Deputy State Historic Preservation Officer.
Okay, and can you... What does that mean, and what do you do?
Okay. I oversee a staff that includes 10, and we operate the federal programs that are dictated under the National Historic Preservation Act. So we oversee the National Register of Historic Places. We oversee the Section 106 process of the federal law, as well as other things like our farm and ranch program and the federal tax credits.
You kind of overlook all it. If something wants to be on the historic registry, then you guys are the ones that they would go through and do the process of actually acquiring historic
designation
status?
Yes. Okay. We have the National Register of Historic Places, and it's an application process. People come to us about their properties initially, and we look at photographs and the history of their property and determine if it is, in fact, eligible. And then if it is, we help them through the process of getting it listed.
Oh, okay.
So our childhood homes will be on there eventually,
definitely.
I'm sure.
Because we'll be
so
famous.
Yeah, once the podcast really takes
off. Right. Just
exactly.
Wait for that.
Well, so what is your relationship with Bruce Goff?
Well, in the 90s, Arne Henderson, who was professor at OU, did an extensive study of Bruce Goff and determining where all of his properties were in the state and whether they were eligible or not for the National Register. And so from there, our staff has continued his research and worked on designating other properties for the National Register of Historic Places. So because of that, myself and other staff members have become extensively involved in these National Register processes, as well as helping people restore these Bruce Goff homes and then doing the additional research necessary for them.
What do you find unique about Bruce Goff's work? So give me your, I guess, your relationship with architecture. Are you an architecture? Did you have a degree? What's your relationship with architecture?
I'm an architectural historian by training.
Okay.
So I have a couple of degrees
that
justify me being considered an architectural historian. And with Bruce Goff, he's a major transition from traditional architecture to what they term organic architecture. Mm-hmm. And so his predecessors were huge on the form follows function mentality of architecture. And his architecture becomes more one of form is fluid based on the environment in which he's designing it. So his architecture is very contextual to the actual site and then develops beyond that to, you know, what does the client want? What don't they want? And then he incorporates that into his design.
So that's really kind of subversive for that period of time.
You could look at it that way. And especially in his residential designs, when you look at them, he really doesn't do what was traditional on houses with the large plate glass windows so that you could see the street. They're at the ceiling level, at the ridge line. And so you get the natural light, but you don't see anything on the street. And the question was always, why did he do that? And was it because he didn't want interaction with the public? Or was it because the client felt like what was on the street wasn't worth seeing?
Right.
And so many of the windows and the big features are on the backside of the house. Okay. Kind of more of a privacy thing.
How did he influence architecture as a whole? Because it seems like he is not as famous as he should be. I mean, it seems like it's kind of growing over the past couple of decades, but it seems like he should be really way up there as far as his ideas and his thought process and his influence on people.
Well, part of it is, you know, most artists don't become famous until they die. In terms of what OU was producing as architects at that time, they really were artists. Many of them, their side ventures were poetry or painting or music. So they were true artists in a lot of different ways. And with Bruce Goff, he only passed away in the 80s. And that really wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes time for people to appreciate these new types of work. You know, people hated the bungalow craftsman shortly after it came out.
Yeah.
And they thought it was kind of a ridiculous housing style. Well, we were at that with Bruce Goff, too. People didn't understand what he was creating. So he's an artist, and it takes time to appreciate what artists create.
Right.
Would you say the kind of the loss of the Bavinger House helped make people like put things into...
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I mean, it definitely got a great deal of publicity when it came down. But I think why it's becoming more popular is generational. The younger people who are starting to now own homes are looking at that mid-century modern as a type of housing style that they like. And so with that generation, because it's so large and so vocal and has so many other ways of expressing their appreciation for that type of thing, that's why it's becoming more popular.
Because he actually is pretty polarizing with people. You kind of either like him or you don't, or you may like some of his stuff, but not particularly maybe some of his homes. Tell us a little bit about, like, from your educated stance, why is it that he is so polarizing?
Because it's different. It's outside the norm. And so when you think about classical historic architecture, it is just very different. It's a lot like stage center. That was very polarizing at the time. People either loved it or they hated it. And this was the same type of architect who was designing stage center as Bruce Goff. I mean, they're very designing something very different. Then from the pragmatic standpoint, it doesn't function well.
Yeah.
His houses don't function well. The kitchens are tiny compared to what we're used to now. You can stand at the stove and be able to, like, turn the faucet on with your leg and kick it on behind you because you're so close. Yeah. It's very much a galley kitchen. And it wasn't about the functionality of the house, really, from kind of the pragmatic standpoint. It was a piece of artwork that he was designing for his clients.
And how rare was that at the time? I was thinking about it as, you know, almost like a filmmaker. Not all filmmakers can make the films that they want. How rare at the time was it for an architect to be able to create structures like this?
Oh, it's very rare. I mean, he got to create specifically for clients based on his artistic impression and their needs. Most people are doing it for income. You know, you need to make money at what you're doing. So you design the office tower, you design a commercial building. But in his case, he was getting to do artwork as architecture. And so that's very rare.
Mr. Goff used a lot of different kinds of materials for his buildings as well. Can you tell us about that? What the different, seems like he recycled a lot of stuff and just some really unusual things that he was building with.
I think of him as an environmentalist before it was popular.
Mm-hmm.
He used what was on site. So when we think about the church up in Edmond, it's oil field parts that he could get scavenge off of a site to build this church. Or in the case of, you know, some more rural properties, he could collect the rocks that are on the site to build the foundations or design the foundations around those. And so, yeah, it was really very much about kind of recycling and repurposing building materials or non-traditional building materials. Mm-hmm. Like in the church in Edmond, the light shades are pie tins. So, I mean, he was very creative with how he used things and the types of materials that were put into every single design that he had.
Do you have a favorite piece of work of his?
You know, I don't necessarily have a favorite of his, but I'm a huge fan of his students. So the people that he taught have gone on to create some amazing works, and you can see his influence in their design. So it's made me appreciate Bruce Goff's design,
right,
but transition into other people's works based on how he taught them. So there's a house in Snyder that is a perfect example of all of Goff's ideology. This house is built up on a granite outcropping. The family owned a granite company and made headstones. And so it really epitomized, A, what the family was about, you know, that granite outcropping and how you use the site to make foundations and then build up from there. And so it's just his ideology can be seen in all of his students' work. And it makes me appreciate that organic movement so much more.
And his influence on his students, I mean, that's seen all over Oklahoma City and all over Oklahoma, really, as far as mid-century architecture.
You can see it from the Panhandle to the Southeast. I mean, it's everywhere, just like his designs. He has worked out in the Panhandle. He has works in Tulsa and all the way down into Norman. So, yes, their influence is all over the state, as well as all over the country.
Do you have any current projects going on with any Bruce Goff properties? Or
I think the most recent thing that we've been doing is reviewing the most recent publication about Bruce Goff that was presented by Arn Henderson. We worked closely with Arn to help him get the photographs and the things that he needed to do that publication. But otherwise, the most recent one that we worked on was the Comer House, which is up in northeast Oklahoma, and we helped them get that listed.
Is that the book?
Yes, that's the
that's
book.
That's fantastic, fantastic
beautiful book.
And thank you for loaning it to us for a few days.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. I was so very careful with it.
So I know that Bruce Goff knew Frank Lloyd Wright. Can you talk about what their relationship was? And he actually officed in the Price Tower in Bartlesville for a while.
Right. Wright came to OU and would talk to students, look at their works, that type of thing. And so they had a close relationship. It was really more of a mentorship because he looked up to Frank Lloyd Wright. And so, you know, they were, for lack of a better word, I mean, it was really more of a student professor mentorship without actually being taught by him.
So he'd come in kind of as a traveling...
Give opinions, guest lectures, that type of
thing. So it seems like the OU at architecture school at this time was really kind of a heavy hitter.
It was. When I recently wrote an article about architectural history in Oklahoma, at the time, OSU is producing traditional architects. OU is really producing the artistry in architects. And so those are, we get the really heavy hitters coming out of OU. I wouldn't say necessarily because they're producing great designs, but because they're producing something so different and very artistic in nature.
It seems like maybe Bruce Goff helped foster that environment.
Oh, absolutely. And the ones who come after him to take over the program do the exact same thing. And they're really hitting an emphasis on it now at the university by creating an exhibit about the American School of Architecture at OU.
Is that going to be a permanent exhibit or...?
I'm not sure exactly how they're going to do it, but the department chair, Hans Bootzer, is in charge of it, and they've got a working group that's really looking at the architects from this period and basing their exhibit on these designs.
We'll have to keep track of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Next up is Lynn Rostischel, who is part of the Oki Mod Squad, and you are a part of this group, or you know a lot about it. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Oki Mod Squad does?
Yeah, well, it started, I guess, about 10 years ago, and Lynn actually started. She's the founder, and it's just a group of like-minded people who appreciate mid-century modern architecture, clothes, music, cars, mostly architecture, though. They actually have a get-together. They do a swap, like kind of like a flea market kind of thing, and it's just all around Oklahoma, just different things that are mod.
Cool. Let's talk to Lynn.
She is one of the founding members of the Oki Mod Squad, and she is also an architectural historian, photographer, and now an author.
Yay.
Yay, yeah. So tell us a little bit about your book.
Well, it's an Arcadia publishing book, and it is called Mid-Century Modern Architecture in Oklahoma City. And I put it together last year. It came out in October and was on the Oklahoma bestseller list twice, 2 weeks.
Awesome.
And so it has gotten a great response, and we're really excited about it.
So you also, you have a famous... Well, semi-famous, his grandfather.
I do. My grandfather was Dwayne Connor. He designed the first Christian church here, the Big Egg, or some people call it Laurel and Hardy. It has all kinds of nicknames, and he designed that back in 1956.
And where is that located? That's on 36?
36th and Walker.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And it's now for sale.
I mean, I know where it is, but I thought
right. I have to tell people.
So this episode is about Bruce Goff, and we thought we'd have you in here to talk a little bit about just about mid-century modern architecture as a whole in Oklahoma. Could you kind of explain what defines mid-century modern architecture as much as you can over the airwaves and stuff? And we'll have pictures, of course.
The elevator speech?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's... There's no strict definition, really. I mean, I would say it's mostly, I would identify it as architecture after World War II, probably up through the mid-70s, sleek lines. You know, a lot of times after World War II, architects started using materials that had been developed for war purposes, and they wanted to experiment with them in architecture. So you had a whole lot of new ideas and new materials coming forth, especially in the 50s and the 60s. And you know, that's where a lot of modern buildings came from.
How do you think Oklahoma kind of got swept up into this post-war modernism?
Well, one thing, Oklahoma was booming for the first time in, you know, 25 years. There, you know, people needed buildings, and there was money, and so there was a big building boom going on to begin with. And to, you know, you were talking about Bruce Goff earlier. He became head of architecture at OU in 1945 and was there for 10 years. And so he had hundreds of students coming out of the school over that 10-year period, and a lot of them decided to stay in Oklahoma. So they started designing buildings all over the place. And if you drive around Oklahoma today, I mean, even the tiniest blip of a town, you can find a really cool example of mid-century modern architecture. That's what makes Oklahoma so special. And it wasn't just Goff students. OSU had a great architecture program at the same time, and many of those you know, architects coming out of architecture school ended up staying here. So we are extremely lucky to have a huge wealth of mid-century modern architecture throughout the state, and not every state gets to say that.
Right.
So what's a good resource for those playing at home?
Yeah.
For, as you name drop some of these buildings and structures, what's a good place? I mean, other than Google Images, is there a specific site you could?
There is a great site, which is our site. It's okcmod.com. It's not just Oklahoma City architecture. I do a weekly blog, and so, you know, I'll go through small towns or even larger cities and document buildings, and so people can search buildings, search towns on our website. So
cool.
It's a great
resource.
Yeah,
hop on there. Obviously, if you're driving in your car right now, just wait till you get home. But
so who do you think were the major players in Oklahoma at the time, during this time frame, as far as architects, besides maybe Bruce Goff? And then, your grandfather. Can you think of anybody else who was...
If we could sit here all day long, I can name off a ton of names. You know, there were some like Caudill, Rowlett, Scott was a firm that started in, actually William Caudill went to OSU, and then he went to Dallas or down near Houston and started the firm, and then they had a headquarters here as well, and they were responsible for designing the very first modern schools after World War II. So, you know, think before World War II, all the schools, you know, these big, boxy, intimidating, castle-like structures that were, you know, more collegiate-looking, what we would expect. And then after World War II, you start to see these long, low lines of schools with windows and courtyards and things like that. Well, they were responsible for those designs. And some of the very first of those schools appeared in Blackwell. And so they were a great firm. They ended up being an internationally recognized firm, did all kinds of stuff. In fact, the firm is still around today and is still one of the top firms in the nation.
Oh, wow.
So that's one of many.
Yeah.
You know, Herb Green was a student of Goff, and he designed several things, obviously his Prairie Chicken House in Norman. And he went to Houston, designed a ton of stuff. He was a professor at the University of Kentucky, so he has his own group of students that he has taught that is carrying on the legacy of Bruce Goff and organic modern architectures. He also designed the Line House in Snyder, Oklahoma, that looks like a bird about to take flight. It's pretty fantastic. Truett Costin had a firm here. He did a lot of stuff, beautiful homes and mid-century modern. Murray Jones Murray was a Tulsa firm. They won. They planned the whole Tulsa Convention Center area. They did the Tulsa Airport, and they won an award for best plan for a municipal complex in the 1960s. They were one of the firms to watch. So, you know, I could go on.
So you mentioned Tulsa, and I know, like, in the Oklahoma City area, I think it was because probably we just didn't have as much money as Tulsa and Bartlesville, but you know, they have all these beautiful Art Deco buildings, and they were starting to get the skyscrapers and things like that. Do you think Oklahoma City was kind of right, or like even just the rest of Oklahoma too, because it's just so flat and there was so much space, or were they tearing things down, like really old buildings, or was there just all this? I'm just imagining Oklahoma being just all this open space with where they can just kind of spread out with their, you know, ranch-style homes in these big neighborhoods, or, like you said, the flat, low-lying schools and things like that.
Well, I absolutely. I think the topography lended itself very well to mid-century modern architecture because we are so flat. And you, any building that would be built on the flat plain would stand out and be dramatic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, something long and low is pretty sexy, and then something tall and crazy really is a standout. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Devon Tower today, you can see that from miles away. It's our mountain in Oklahoma City. So definitely, I think the geography helped a lot. You know, Tulsa's got, yes, that amazing Art Deco architecture. I'm not really sure why that didn't happen as much here as it did there, but, you know, they really are lucky to have such a great body of Deco there.
I was just kind of guessing that maybe it was all the oil money that they had.
Well, very probably so, yeah.
You know, they had the money to actually build the buildings.
Right.
Do you think, is there anything unique to Oklahoma as far as mid-century architecture goes, or is it pretty much the same as all over? I think of, like, you know, it's the Atomic Age, and yet also still, like, the cowboys and Indians thing are still really popular. So you see, like, the arrows or the teepees around.
Yeah.
And is this something you see throughout the nation, or is that more of, like, an Oklahoma thing or a Midwest, or because we're, you know, closer to?
Oh, I think that's definitely an Oklahoma thing. I mean, if you go down 35 or if you go west down 40, you see the teepee rest stops. Where else are you going to see those? Those are so great. Bruce Goff did a teepee-style house in Norman called the Maginus House, which is a total teepee. His Hopewell Baptist Church is a teepee. So I definitely think a lot of these architects paid homage to the history of Oklahoma, you know, when they were designing buildings. You have a lot, especially Bruce Goff, you know, he was into organic modernism. So there's a lot of that here too, a lot of rock, a lot of, you know, earthy materials and things like that. So and you know, I think if you think California, you think more, you know, open windows and light and airy. And you've got some of that here, but I think more of it is pattern and repetition and rock and earth and you know, much more grounded kind of mid-century architecture.
Yeah, because I think of that and, like, the difference between Oklahoma mid-century architecture and like Palm Springs or something, where, you know, you think of, like, you said, like, the windows, maybe the pastel colors or things like that.
Well, I mean, you think the weather, too. I mean, we've got the wind. It gets a lot colder. I don't know about an all-glass house here. You'd have to have a very good heating system.
So growing up, was this something that was just in the family, in your blood? I mean, when did your passion ignite for this type of architecture? And does it extend beyond architecture into just design in general?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. For a long time, I never thought a whole lot about it. But now, you know, as I've reflected, I can remember being 3 years old and driving by what used to be the Plaza Tower Hotel. It's gone now. And just being so mesmerized by that building. So, and it was my favorite building for years. And, you know, growing up, I'd be like, oh, look at this building. So I think it was just something that I came by naturally. And, you know, then I became a photographer, and I've always liked history. So it's been a great way to combine all my interests into one thing.
Do you have any, like, must-see spots for people who are traveling through Oklahoma and looking for mid-century modern architecture?
Oh, yeah. So in Oklahoma City, obviously I would say the First Christian Church because that's my baby. another church here that people don't even really know about because it's just kind of quiet, doing its own thing, is St. Patrick's Catholic Church.
18th in Portland.
Yes. Now, you know, on the outside, that church just looks like a slab against the sky. But you go inside there, and it is the most magical space. It gives me goosebumps every time I go inside. Have you guys been in?
Mm-hmm. I have.
Have you?
I haven't.
You need to go. In Tulsa, definitely the Oral Roberts University campus. I mean, if you want to feel like you're on a different planet or a Star Trek episode, that is the place to go. It's just so fantastical. You cannot walk around that campus without getting all giddy and just smiling from ear to ear. In Lawton, there are several designs by an architect named Paul Harris. He did the National Guard Armory, the McMahon Auditorium. He did a lot of great stuff. Ardmore's got some fun stuff. Harold Flood was an architect down there and did some schools and the art gallery there. Enid, oh my gosh, Enid has so much great architecture. Briggs Auditorium, there's like this office complex on stilts that was designed by a firm called Smith and Day. Tom Rogers was an architect there, and he really liked thin shell concrete, so there's a lot of googie craziness going on there. I mean, I could talk for days. I could go on and on.
What about Bruce Goff structures that are still standing in Oklahoma? What are your favorite?
Oh, boy. That's tough because the Bavinger House is not there anymore.
Yeah.
That would have been a no-brainer. You know, I like the Pollock House here in Oklahoma City with its zigzag green roof. It's fabulous. There's a house he did in Veneta. He's got a lot of really great homes in Bartlesville that are really fun. There's an education building, Redeemer Lutheran Educational Building, that's really great there. What I would suggest anyone learning about Goff or wanting to know about Goff, there's a society dedicated to him called Friends of Kebyar, and they do a publication every quarter, and they actually have a Bruce Goff guide to Oklahoma, so you can see all the buildings he did in Oklahoma, and they're all on maps and everything, so you can take like a little day trip and tour around and see Goff houses and buildings that are still there. It's great. It's a great resource.
This keeps popping up again and again, and this was something I had thought about for years and years. Churches in Oklahoma, if you're not from Oklahoma, I'll explain that we have a church on every corner practically.
They're like bars in Boston.
They are, yeah, they're like bars in Boston. But that's what I've always has attracted me to, or got me interested into mid-century modern architecture, was just all of these churches. It seems like all of a sudden all these churches just grew overnight in the 50s and 60s. What was that? What do you think? Do you have any idea what that is? Or,
well, I think a lot of those churches, the congregations, were probably in buildings that had been constructed at the turn of the 20th century. You know, I think a lot of these congregations probably exploded after World War II. They wanted to expand. They wanted to do more things than just have services in a sanctuary, you know, like First Christian Church. You know, Bill Alexander was the minister there, and he wanted a youth center with a bowling alley. He wanted to expand it and make it a real refuge for children and you know, youth coming up. So I think a lot of churches wanted more, and you know, they were stuck on these tiny downtown lots in these old buildings, mm-hmm. and wanted something new and fresh and modern, because they were looking toward the future and they wanted their architecture to reflect that.
Are there any Okie Mod Squad events coming up?
Well, we are planning our third annual Oklahoma Modernism Weekend. The first 2 years were at the First Christian Church, and this year will be in Bartlesville. So it'll be the first weekend in June. If you want more information about it as we're planning, you can go on the Okie Mod Squad Facebook page, because mm-hmm. we'll be updating that a lot. And then also our website, okcmod.com, has an events page, and you can look at that.
Well, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Personal question, Angela. Do you feel a connection to the mid-century architecture being born in the mid-century?
Technically, I was not born in mid-century, but... So our last guest, Brittany Harris, is working on a documentary about Bruce Goff.
Yeah, you may have heard, maybe you threw down some money for her Indiegogo. The introduction of our last episode had a little plea for funds for the documentary. And
you want to check out our website so you can see what the project's all about. What is the name of your project?
So it's pretty simple. It's called Goff.
Okay, and that's G-O-F-F.
Correct.
So this is a documentary about Bruce Goff, mm-hmm. an architect. Why don't you tell us a little bit about him and what he has to do with Oklahoma?
So Bruce Goff wasn't born in Oklahoma, but he moved to Oklahoma when he was a kid, and he started working for a firm called Rush and Decott & Rush in Tulsa when he was 12. So he started really early doing architecture and contributing to the landscape of Oklahoma. And since then, he, you know, grew and had this amazing career. He was friends with Frank Lloyd Wright, actually thought of as almost an equal to Frank Lloyd Wright, created homes all over the U.S. as well as a museum next to LACMA in L.A., but kind of wasn't as recognized or kind of seen in the architectural scene as much as Frank Lloyd or other right. architects.
Mm-hmm. What do you do at an architecture firm when you're 12? Because I was useless. When I was 12, I was...
in the olden days. That would be like 1916 or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Quite there actually early. Was child labor back then.
Okay, okay. That makes sense.
And he was a part of it.
He was probably like running blueprints or sharpening pencils or something.
It was mostly kind of like an internship kind of thing. Yeah. So learning from, you know, the trade and the history of architecture. And he was a really big drawer. So he started drawing really young. And so his dad was like, you should go do this. And
it beats the coal mine.
Yeah,
absolutely. So what got you interested in Bruce Goff? Do you have any kind of background in architecture, or is it just your love for Oklahoma and seeing his homes or buildings?
So I don't have a formal architecture background. I'm a filmmaker, so I haven't really known anything about architecture until this point. I found Bruce Goff about 4 years ago. I was looking for Norman oddities, and I ran across what's called the Babinger House. Mm-hmm. It's one of his most iconic houses. It's a spiral in Norman, and I was immediately drawn to it. And I was drawn to his story as I began to research more and more. He kind of was this unique and kind of weirdo mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere. And I loved it because I felt very much similar to
right.
that. And so I just immediately grasped onto his story.
Can you talk about, as you're going through the process of making the documentary, what was your approach? Did you start with getting footage of buildings? Did you right. interviews with family? Who are you seeking out, and kind of talk about the production?
Mm-hmm. So this has been such an evolution of stories compiling and figuring out different assets of Goff. We started out interviewing, you know, journalists from this Land Press who wrote an article about Goff. And then that evolved into us interviewing his secretary. And that it's just basically you cast a wide web mm-hmm. and then you find different individuals that know different sides of his story. And that kind of compiles and leads you to someone else or some other place. So we gathered those interviews, and then we went on this 10-day road trip across the country to interview homeowners of his, people that knew him best. And that's kind of the backbone of the story. And then we went and interviewed his biographer, who kind of gave us the full story of Goff.
So what? So I have two questions. Which structure did you find the most exciting or appealed to you the most?
So there's two buildings in particular that were kind of like his jewels, which is the Babinger House in Norman mm-hmm. that was recently destroyed a year or so ago. And then there was Shinnecon, which was in Bartlesville, that was burned down. So both have these really interesting kind of tragic stories to them. But I think for me, the Babinger House is what really I was really connected to, because it was the greatest symbol of one of his philosophies called the continuous present, which is kind of this definition of living in the past and present at the same time. And Goff always wanted to incorporate that into his architecture and kind of have this like freedom within architecture mm-hmm. and freedom within like living in that space. So you weren't just confined to that space, you could grow within it.
Right.
And that was kind of the Babinger House for him. So
the Babinger House, I know it's hard because this is going to be a recording, but can you kind of explain?
It's basically
get on Google Images.
Yeah.
bring it up.
Before I paint you this picture horribly. So Goff wanted to bring the outside in. Mm-hmm. So Gene Babinger, who was the owner of the house, was an art professor at OU, and he loved to be in the garden, and his wife Nancy also was very outdoorsy. So they basically built this kind of spiral out of stone, and it had inside there was water running through it, there were areas of plants, you know, like potted within the walls, and then there were these pods, there were these like yellow cushioned carpet pods that were these rooms that hung from the top. And that was basically it. It was just this big open cylinder and these pods as rooms connecting it.
How do we lose something like that? I mean, how do you go from this? I don't want to give away too much. You'll see it in the documentary, mm-hmm. but talk about how it kind of fell into ruin. And
well, kind of the major theme with Goff structures is that they're made with very strange materials. So that's a hard thing to maintain as a homeowner. we've kind of forgotten him. There's a great movement of people that are protecting him and trying to preserve his work and his story. But there's a lot of homes all over, not even just Oklahoma, that are have kind of been left to decay and are kind of falling apart. And a lot of that has to do with the materials, but a lot of it has to do with the fact that we don't really know who Bruskoff is in our own state.
Right.
And I think that is one of the major reasons why we've lost some of his most iconic buildings.
My other question is, what, you said that, he had kind of like, he was kind of a weirdo, lack of a better word. What do you think, what was like one of his most strange, anything that you read that really surprised you about him?
He was a weirdo, but he wasn't in many ways. His style was unique.
Right.
He drew and he wrote music. Mm-hmm. He was just kind of this amazing creative.
Yeah.
And being this, you know, very unique creative in Oklahoma kind of set him apart. Mm-hmm. And so he was also very Midwestern, you know, he was very soft-spoken. He didn't want to have all the attention and all of the eyes on him. He just wanted to create things that he liked. So it wasn't so much like he was trying to shock people or...
Right. He just wanted to create his art or right. express himself. Yeah.
What time period in Oklahoma was he most...
The 50s.
The 50s. So, I mean, having a mind outside the norm in the right. 50s in Oklahoma
would be a really, yeah.
Yeah, he would be naturally just kind of...
And you're also dealing with, like, the McCarthy era where, oh, yeah. you know, Goff was gay and Goff was, you know, not exactly living a normal life or mm-hmm. creating normal lives for others. He was creating these very obscure pieces of architecture, mm-hmm. and a lot of people didn't want to look at them, and so a lot of people didn't really get him or accept him.
We were actually talking earlier about why did he stay in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. That was just kind of, you know, if it was maybe, I guess, the Midwesternness of himself or
had
just trying to stay
up. Had he been
to
Oregon at the time?
I think, I mean, I don't have an answer because I can't sit down and ask right. him, but I think for me, what we've collected with all the interviews is that he didn't want to be a god. He did not want to be this architectural, enormous icon. You know, he just wanted to create things that he liked and he wanted to create things that were good. I think that's...
Yeah, so yeah. staying in Oklahoma would give him still, like, he'd be able to keep some anonymity.
Yeah, and do the work.
Yeah, and it's cheaper to do it here, and there's clients here that really respect him, mm-hmm. and it was just kind of a fun place, I think, to create.
What do you see in Goff's work, either through his own words or that you see that's distinctly Oklahoman?
I think with Goff, he incorporated so much of nature and so much of the surroundings. So every structure kind of engulfed what was around it, local materials in that area. So I think that, I mean, we have like the Cherokee architecture at OU, but mm-hmm. Goff never really leaned towards that. I think it was taking the Oklahoma landscape and incorporating it into his structures. That's how it is most Oklahoman.
Well, that is Bruce Goff, obviously.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell. The tour that Lynn talked about, that's something that you should definitely do. Check out all Goff's properties in Oklahoma mm-hmm. and be aware. And, you know, when some of these properties come up and they might be destroyed or, you know, right. help be involved with the Okemod Squad and check out the State Historic Preservation Office and see all the things they're doing. And
right. Because these buildings do, you know, they're worth saving. These are going to be the next generation that needs saving. So, yeah, I'd encourage people to be active in their community if they have a building that.
So, yeah, we're going to chip in, and with our efforts, we're going to save up all of our money and buy the bank over on Lincoln.
Yeah, there's a really cool, it looks like a flying saucer. I think it's a Bank of America, maybe?
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's really cool.
And we're going to make that our lair, our headquarters. I'm not even sure what the next podcast is, so I can't
It'll
give
be a
you
surprise
a sneak peek.
For yeah. everybody.
For us, because we're going to, where do you want to go to lunch?
You know, I'm really feeling a Cafe Antigua today, or Cacao.
Ooh, Antigua, it's got to be Antigua.
Okay, Antigua.
I think this is the second shout out Antigua's gotten on the
we
podcast.
We love Antigua. If you're in Oklahoma City, definitely. I mean, they don't even...
18th and Classen.
You would think they were giving us money. They're not. It's just wonderful Guatemalan food.
Absolutely. And they have the Cafe Montaleños, the number 7, which is the alpha and omega of breakfast.
Machaca. all the way.
Okay, whatever. So anyways, we'll see you next week, ladies and germs.
Such a dork.
Okay, bye.